Welcome to Police Stories Podcast. This is a series of short stories about my 28-year career in the UK Police Force. Welcome. If this is your first time, and welcome back. If you've been here before, hopefully you've been following the series. If not, you might want to go back and start at the beginning. I know it's getting boring me saying that, but that's the last time, promise. Probably. So here we are, episode 86. This is going to be the last podcast in the series. Never say never, as we'll talk about towards the end, and there's a few bits I wanted to cover, and then hopefully kind of wrap it up, and that'll be that. So just a brief follow-up on what we did last week. We talked about, if you remember, the double fatal accident, and by all means go back to episode 85 if you just wanted to hear about that. And the one thing I forgot actually on that is my wife who reminded me, two cars had a head-on collision, if you remember, and unfortunately were fatalities. But certainly the driver of the VW Passat that was hit head-on, if you remember, he ended up with a broken sternum and sort of chest-type injuries. What I forgot to say was that off the back of that injury and him going into hospital to have x-rays, you know, and obviously be treated for that broken sternum, they discovered that he had cancer. It's something he didn't know about, but luckily and directly because of that accident, they discovered it early enough. It was in its very early stages, and he was able to be successfully treated for that. So you wouldn't think that there could be any kind of positive news come out of a double fatal accident, but that's certainly it. And I should imagine he's counting his lucky stars. You know, it's a weird thing, isn't it, fate, you know, that you have this horrendous accident which you think will be life-changing. Well, yes, it was life-changing, you know, but possibly in a good way for him. Well, very probably. So yeah, a bit of a strange one, that certainly gets you thinking. And sorry, I've got straight into it, but thanks very much for the downloads again last week, and again, some more coffee's bought for me, so I appreciate that. Yeah, that's it. So we'll move on then. And now, one of the things about the police is, and I've touched on this a little bit before, and I don't know whether it's unique to the police or not, or the job as we call it. People in the job tend to talk about retirement a lot. And I can remember certainly from having maybe 10 years in the job that there would be, you know, regular discussions about what people were going to do when they retired and what they were going to do with their pension, invariably when they were at a fairly low time. You know, they come back from a horrendous accident, they've been stood in the pouring rain, the freezing cold all day outside some, you know, crime scene, and basically had enough at that point, you know, or they were busy, you know, wiping the spit and the blood off the guy they've just brought in fighting with. You know, that's the sort of time of going, I can't wait to retire, you know, when I retire I'm going to go and sit on a desert island, you know, in the sun. But I'm not sure if that's unique to the police or not. Again, spoken to my wife, who's long-term NHS, you know, and other people in different lines of work, it doesn't seem to necessarily follow that they have these discussions. And I think some of it is perhaps that certainly like the NHS, you know, they retire, I think, at like 67, and you're generally quite a bit older than you are in the police when you retire. So that is perhaps that's why that it's not discussed so much, or perhaps it is because of the nature of the job. I don't know. But certainly, yeah, from probably about 10 years in of potentially a 30-year career, it seems to be the discussion. And of course, the other issue is that you are working with people all the time at different levels of service. So you will regularly work with people that are, you know, approaching retirement. So obviously you will hear all their thoughts and, you know, concerns and plans and what have you. So of course it embeds it in your mind, you know. But around about 2012, and if you remember, back in 2012, we talked about a few episodes back, I was on the Marine unit on the dive team in the Met, and I was helping out, or certainly doing quite a bit of work in relation to the 2012 London Olympics. You know, it was a fantastic time, really enjoyed it, did a lot of work. But what happened was, just after those Olympics, now some people would say the timing was on purpose in terms of huge pension changes for the police just after the Olympics. Now, a lot of goodwill was used on those Olympics, where people, you know, worked flat out, did extra days, worked longer hours, you know. Yes, of course, they were paid overtime, but certainly there was a lot of goodwill used up on that. And I do wonder that had the pension changes been announced before it, perhaps the government were slightly concerned that, you know, they wouldn't get, you know, quite the service perhaps that they they did get, you know, in relation to the Olympics. But anyway, you know, that's just me. So it changed massively. Now, when I joined up, you know, and it's hard to imagine when you're 21 sitting in a classroom at police training college and they say, sign here for the pension, you kind of think, I'm 21. I'm not going to have to worry about a pension for years. And you pretty much don't think about it. Luckily for me, my dad at that point was a cop and, you know, a long-term cop, or in fact, he'd just retired actually then, but he'd done his nigh on 30 years service as well. So he was badgering me day in, day out, make sure you sign for that pension. It's the best thing you'll ever do. And, you know, he appreciated, you're 21. You don't think you'll ever need a pension, but trust me, one day you will, hopefully. So you must sign up for it. And pretty much the pension was that, you know, you sign up, and you say, I'll do 30 years service, and at the end of it, you'll give me a lump sum, and then you'll pay me X amount a month, you know, until I die. Now, people will say, you know, a lot of people go, well, you retired very early, and oh, I know about you, police, you know, you have fantastic pensions, and, you know, I hear that a lot, both at the young age and also particularly that, oh, your pensions are very good. Now, they always sort of say it like I get the pension for free, you know, they gave it to me for nothing. But the reality is, you know, you have to pay in for your entire length of service, obviously, and it's a huge chunk, you know, of your wages. When I speak to, you know, people that are in other roles, you know, you say to them, how much is your pension a month? And they say, oh, it's a lot. You know, it's costing me £100 a month, you know, and you think, wow, you know, that is not a lot of money. And now the police pension, even with its changes, is still very good. The changes they tried to make in 2012 would have cost your average cop a huge amount. You know, it's the difference between having to, being able to retire and, you know, having to continue working after retirement. And certainly the lump sum, it would have cut about three quarters off the lump sum and cost you probably half of your monthly payment to what you were getting. Now, frustratingly, of course, when that happened, I had, I don't know, getting on for 20 odd years in the service, something like that. So at that point, now I can fully intended to do my 30 years, you know, as I'd signed for, you know, all those years prior. And then suddenly here we were 20 years into my service, the government are saying, we'll still take the same amount, it'll still cost you the same, but we're going to give you a quarter of your lump sum and half of what we promised until you die. You know, and you can imagine there was absolute uproar. But the one thing the police have against them is we're not allowed to strike. That, you know, there's an absolute rule that you cannot strike and you can't even discuss it technically. If you even discuss striking at work, that can actually be an offence that potentially leaves you liable to arrest. And of course, you know, I get the feeling why, you know, but other, you know, groups, whether it's the, you know, I don't know, big, you know, companies and things, they have the option, don't they, of striking until they get what they want. The classic is the train drivers. You know, the train drivers sort of strike at the drop of a hat. They're fantastically well paid. They work, you know, very few hours, get really good money. And that is because they've got very strong abilities to pretty much, you know, hold the country, the UK, to ransom and walk out the door for a long-term strike, same as teachers, etc. But the police don't have that luxury. So initially there was a lot of rumblings and people arguing it and trying to, you know, think of all thoughts. I heard various people saying, well, I'm just going to come out of the pension. The problem was if you came out of it, it got frozen where it was. So it didn't sort of obviously increase or get any better. And they put in all sorts of clever little backdoor rules that if you came out of it, basically you'd had it, you know, because some people were saying, oh, I'll come out of it and I'll buy a flat, you know, I'll put some money together from the money I was paying into the pension, which the pension has cost me, you know, kind of £500 or £600 a month for 28 years. So, you know, they have not given that pension to me for free. You know, I've spent an awful lot of money on it over the years, but it is still a very good pension, you know. So, yeah, some people talked about putting in their money into property instead. But again, if you came out, rather than being able to retire at 30 years, you know, you couldn't retire and get your pension until you were 60 years old, which for a lot of people like me that joined early would have meant I'd have had to do sort of, you know, 40 odd years service. So that was a no-no. Anyway, basically, a few cops, thankfully, set up a legal challenge to the government in relation to the police pension, and then started obviously taking in people to sign up for it, and eventually put together a private legal firm that took on this fight against the government in relation to our pensions. Now, they ended up with kind of, you know, 10,000 plus cops, including me, signed up for it, and it took 10 years, but eventually we won. Again, thankfully for me, only about 2 years before I retired, we kind of won and got our pensions mainly back to how they were. It was slightly worse, but nothing like it. You know, we maybe lost 10%, but nothing compared to how it was going to cost us, you know. So it would have cost us an awful lot of money. And I say, totally changed the retirement for everyone, which I wouldn't have minded if that's what I'd signed up for. But the frustrating thing was, I'd signed up and said, I'll do a deal, I'll do my 30 years and you will give me X, you know, at the end of my retirement. So, yes, thankfully we won, and, you know, and that has made a big difference to my life going forward now. Obviously, we have to pay, you know, legal fees, substantial legal fees, between 10,000 of us. But, yeah, very much worth it from my point of view. So as my retirement, you know, sort of approached, I had maybe, you know, perhaps a year to go, something like that. And of course, everyone kept asking, oh, when do you retire? It's not long now, you know, and it gets you thinking about it and you're wondering what to do. I saw a lot of people retiring and then immediately going into other jobs. I knew I didn't want to do that for sure. And I wasn't even sure if, you know, I wanted to actually have another job, certainly not initially. Always wanted to travel a lot, particularly in Europe. Brexit made that very difficult for the UK, but not impossible. And myself and the wife always, yeah, had this dream of sort of traveling Europe. So that was the thinking, that we would do some traveling first while we were kind of figuring out what we were going to do. So, you know, the date approached and we wondered what we're doing, because the issue with the police is that not only obviously are you working long hours all the time, quite often, you know, earlies, lates, nights, so you're up at all hours. You quite often are told when you can take your annual leave. You can't just book it anytime. Sometimes there are set blocks when you have to take it. And if that doesn't tie in, and also a lot of us, you know, had fairly young kids and things at school at various points, so that becomes very difficult trying to juggle those with kids to be off, you know, when it's half term and things. And I know other, you know, people that work, you know, and businesses and what have you have this same issue, but certainly it was quite difficult. And the other thing was that court, you know, you could be called back for court at any point. Now, you could put in a thing to say, I need a 2 week block here without court, because I'm going away, you know, I'm going abroad, I've paid for a holiday in Egypt or wherever, so I cannot come back. And they generally could grant it, but ultimately a court could call you back, and that did happen on occasion. So you could book this holiday, you could be waiting 6 months for this holiday of your lifetime to Australia or somewhere, and then you suddenly get a court warning for right in the middle of it. So of course you're putting in a frantic various forms to say, I'm in Australia, I can't come back. And very occasionally they'll say, you're absolutely pivotal to the case, you're going to have to come back. So right in the middle of a family holiday, you know, I mean, they would have to pay for you to fly back, but regardless of being paid for or whatever, can you imagine how disruptive that is? So the thought of, you know, going on holiday or going away in the motorhome, as we have, if you be aware, if you've listened to the series, and not having to come back, you know, it is so sort of freeing, you know, that it's been very nice. But getting a little bit ahead of myself. So certainly in my last 6 months then of before retirement, it became quite hard to motivate myself. My job as a counter-terrorist liaison officer, a CTLO, was all about, you know, organising meetings, a lot of meetings with various people and arranging exercises and things. And those weren't done, you know, sort of for tomorrow. They were done 3 or 6 months or maybe more ahead. So, of course, I had lots of people emailing me saying, oh, about this exercise, you know, in 6 months' time, and about this and about that. And you're kind of looking at the day thinking, I won't be here, you know. So you're trying to remain interested and motivated, but you're secretly thinking, I'm actually not going to be here for that. That'll be my replacement that deals with that. And obviously, as the day approached, you know, it became more and more so. And I can remember working with people that were, you know, 5 years out from retirement, you say, what are you going to do? And they're like, oh, I might do this and I might do that, you know. And as time went on for them, I remember one in particular, you got to sort of 3 months out from when he retired. And you're saying, so what are you going to do then? He's like, I have no idea. You know, I'm really going to miss the job. And although we all moan about the job, lots of people become very concerned because they think it defines them. And it's all they've ever known, you know, for most of their working life. And if I'm not a cop, what am I going to be, you know? And some people would say, well, I like telling people, you know, if I'm out somewhere, what I do, and I'm proud of what I do. And what if I then don't do anything? What if I'm nobody, you know, and all this sort of thing. But so it is interesting to see how different people deal with it. For me, there was, yeah, it was a little bit of trepidation. I was a bit of kind of wondering how I would cope with that side of it. But I was definitely feeling that, you know, I was... I'd kind of was done with a job. Do you know what I mean? I really felt like I'd given it a good go. Hopefully you've heard all the different units and the sort of things I've taken part in. So, you know, I felt that I'd kind of been there and done that, quite frankly. But it was interesting how the feelings were, you know, as it approached, for sure. But generally I was looking forward to it. Now, they changed the rules slightly in Scotland, particularly, so you could go, as long as you had at least 25 years service and you were 50 years old, you could retire on a slightly reduced pension. And that's what I chose to do in the end. I ended up doing 28 and a half years. Don't forget that half years, that's very important. Did that time, and I actually retired about 3 or 4 days after I became 50. Now, some of you will be going, 50, you know, that's really young to retire and you get a really good pension. Cool, it's all right for you, please. Just like I was talking about a minute ago. No, but, you know, that's what some people say. But don't forget, you know, 28 and a half years of paying an awful lot each month for the privilege. But of course, it does open up that I could continue to work. So finally, that last day came around. And my office generally had about 4 people in it, although none of them did my role. We did sort of different roles. But weirdly, just how it worked, because it was July, it was kind of holiday season. So loads of people were off, you know, on holiday. And in fact, virtually everyone, you know, you had the response cops in that were, you know, answering the 999 calls. But of course, they were in and out. They weren't really kind of here or there much in the actual nick itself in the police station. And when I walked around, all the bosses, you know, were kind of out. My sergeant was on holiday, my inspector was on holiday in Florida, you know, there was no one else sat in my office, there was literally just me. And I was doing an 8 to 4 on that day, a day shift, and I came in for my normal time just before 8, you know, got a coffee, kind of sat around, checked a few emails, pinged off a few emails saying goodbye to people, and come about 11 o'clock, I was kind of sat there going, well, this is ridiculous, you know, there's literally no one here, there's no work for me to do, I can't take anything on, arrange anything or do anything, because there's absolutely no point. I'd already had like amazingly the job had actually thought ahead, mainly because I'd badgered them and had actually already appointed my replacement a week before I went. So we had a good solid week, or in fact I think it was 2 in the end, of a handover, you know. So he was up and running and was very much raring to go and was off out the starting blocks before I left. So my role had already been taken over. So I really was sort of without any work on that last day. And it got to about 11 o'clock. And in fact, my former sergeant, who'd retired a little bit before that, had messaged me and said, I'll pop up and see you on your last day. And about, I think it was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon or something, he messaged me and said, oh, you know, you're about, I'll come up and see you, you know. And I said, I've already gone home, you know, because there was no one about. There was just no point in sitting there twiddling my thumbs for those last few hours. So I decided against it and I just left. And there was no one to even say goodbye to. Well, the only person I could find in the end was my former neighbour when I was on uniform, very good friend of mine. And I was particularly pleased because you have to, on the last day, you have to physically hand in your warrant card, you know, that shows you're a police officer. To somebody. Now, normally that's to like a chief inspector or a, you know, a superintendent or inspector or whatever, but there was none of those about. I couldn't find anyone at all. So I literally walked around the nick looking for anyone to leave my warrant card with. And then I was very pleased that on that last day, I found my former neighbour sat in an office. She was doing another role by then. And, you know, she's a PC like me or like I was. And I gave her my warrant card and said, you know, can you pass that on to, I don't know, some boss when you see somebody or find out who it's got to go to eventually when my inspector sergeants, whatever, come back from leave, you know, give it to them. And I think they literally just unceremoniously cut it up with a pair of scissors and, you know, it gets destroyed and that's that. So it's very weird logging off for the last time and wandering out, I say, particularly when, no one was there. But there we go. It was a bit flat, I suppose, you know, but hey ho, what can you do? You know, that's how it is. It was done. What I did have to look forward to, though, was very good, was within a couple of days of retiring, myself and the wife, and particularly for my 50th birthday, we'd planned to go to New York, and that's exactly what we did. We had, I think, 4 days or 4 nights, you know, in New York, and did all the tourist things. Fantastic trip, really enjoyed it. And it was really nice way of, you know, kind of finishing up and just marking it both with my birthday and the end of my career, you know. So it was good, and we thoroughly enjoyed that trip. So then what now, really, and what happened? Well, firstly, I'll tell you kind of what I'm doing now, which is easy because it's not an awful lot, you know. I've been doing the podcast, obviously. We have a motorhome and we have been travelling Europe. And ultimately, we have sold our house in Scotland and we are looking at a permanent move, probably to Portugal, although we do change our minds, or I change my mind virtually daily in terms of what we should do or where we should go or what we should buy, because there's a little bit of concern about obviously making the right choice, and it's a big move. But we think the plan is now the house is sold, hopefully in the next few weeks. And then we will get our visas for Portugal, buy a house in Portugal and go and live there full time. And whether we work there, we're not too sure yet. We've got the option. We may partially rent out the house, or one of the properties we're looking at there could be a business. So we might start something. We're not sure yet. You know, we're both kind of 50 or early 50s, and, you know, whatever we do, we don't intend to do too much, quite frankly. Although we do feel that we're a bit young to, what we're not going to do is sit down, put our feet up and say, that's us done, and basically wait to die. Because unfortunately, I have known people who retire like that. And certainly people that have worked long shifts in my job seem to only last a year or two sometimes before they kick the bucket. You know, I'm hoping I won't be one of those. Obviously, I can't say for sure. I'm touching wood at this point. But, you know, we are active still. We're out dog walking. We're out cycling. We're out, you know, doing something. You know, we're not just sat in the house doing nothing all day. So we're certainly keeping our time busy. And yeah, for the last 2 months or so, we've been in Portugal and Europe in the van, looking at different housing options and actually living in the city we probably want to end up in, which was fantastic. It was everything we hoped for, and we really enjoyed our time over there. And it's absolutely confirmed that, you know, that's what we want to do. So coming on to the podcast then, this is the last one, and I feel personally the podcast has served its purpose. You know, I set out, if you go right back to the intro, I haven't heard it for myself for a long time because it was however long ago now, what was it, a year and a half ago or something, but the reality is I did this podcast because I wanted my family to know what I'd done. That was part of it. I really wanted them to hear, kind of, you know, they'd heard stories and they knew some of what I'd done, but, you know, in this series of 86 episodes, if I haven't bored you to death, you know, we've really got into what my career was about and the things that I saw and did, you know, not all of them good, as you've heard. I didn't want those stories to die with me. And it sounds perhaps a bit morbid and a bit like, well, why do you think you're so special? Who would want to hear your stories? Throughout my career, when I had, you know, 15, 20, 25 years in, I would tell these stories to, you know, the younger cops that I would work with. And generally, I think they enjoyed listening to them. And a few people would say, wow, I love your stories. They always make me laugh, or you've always got a story, an analogy or something, you know. And it got me thinking that perhaps I should share that with people, which is why I started the podcast, you know. And I also just wanted a record of that career. I just thought it'd be a bit of a shame that all these experiences I've had, all these things I've got up to, if they just fizzled out, no one ever knew what I did, and that was the end of it. So now it's down, you know, as a podcast, and we'll be out there. And that comes on to the next point then, really. So the intention is to take some of this information from the podcast and turn it into a book. Now there may be some new information in there. Some of it will be what's come from the podcast, and hopefully that will reach a totally, you know, different sort of audience. Of course, the big issue is I have no clue about writing a book, and I've been Googling recently about how can you turn a podcast into a book, and it's not quite as easy as you think. I don't think you can just kind of print it off, or, you know, get it transcribed and then just slap it into a book and fire it onto Amazon. I think there's a bit more involved in terms of editing, and because what may sound interesting on a podcast perhaps doesn't, you know, in the written word. So It's going to need a bit of looking at for sure. So that is my intention, but I haven't really got a time scale for it. Obviously, I've not even started. I'm ahead of the game in terms of, you know, there's obviously a lot of information here for me from the podcast to start with. I don't really want to write it from scratch, obviously, because it would be like starting all over again. But we'll see how that works out. I'm going to speak to a few people. There are a few companies that do it, although some of them want ridiculous money. I was looking at one that wanted $2,000, I think it was a month, to set it up and to host it and all that. I mean, that was ridiculous. Because again, a bit like the podcast, I'd be amazed if anyone actually buys it, let alone, you know, so I'm clearly not going to spend too much on it. But I will have a go. So one thing I would ask you is, myself and the wife have talked about it and various other people, what about a title for the book? You know, what should I call it? You know, we have one idea, which I won't say at this point because we're really not sure. But I'd be interested in your thoughts. And do you think, you know, a book would work? You know, do you think it only works as a podcast? You know, anything at all you can help me with in terms of why don't you do this? You could do that. You know, why don't you turn it into an audiobook or whatever it is? Because I'm totally out of my depth here. I haven't got a clue what I'm doing, much like with the podcast, really, and most of my police career. So just, yeah, let me know. See what you think. I'm sure some of you guys and girls out there, you know, we've had over 30,000 downloads, as you're probably aware. I think we're about 32,000 now. But so somebody out there, I'm sure, has knowledge of this stuff. And you can either reach me, probably the easiest way is make a comment on either the Facebook page or Police Stories Podcast or through YouTube, leave a comment. I can get back to you, you know, something like that. The other thing I'd say cheekily is if anyone's got any job offers out there, if you've got any after dinner speaking you want done, or if you are in a police training college and perhaps, because I have done some stuff at universities before where I've gone and given inputs, for example, on the dive team or whatever. So if you worked in that environment, if you were doing, you know, like a crime course within a university and you wanted a speaker to come in or something like that, I've always enjoyed that stuff. So for sure, I could do something like that. Yeah, I'm very open to any job offers at all that anyone out there can think of within reason, you know. So that pretty much is that, to be honest with you. That's all I've got to say about that, much like Forrest Gump said. Please, you know, contact me if you'd like to know anything. Oh, that was the other thing, that if, although I've said this is the end of the podcast, you know, I've kind of got not much more material. There is a little bit more, but stuff that I'm not necessarily going to put out because it's either very, you know, boring or whatever. But if something happens, you know, in the news that I feel very strongly about, I may come back and do, you know, the odd podcast to cover those things. And equally, if you have experienced something or you see something and you're really not sure and you'd really like perhaps, you know, an ex-cop's viewpoint on that, you know, if it's an interesting subject, or even if it's not an interesting subject, again, contact me through the various ways on the Facebook page, YouTube or whatever. And maybe I will come back and just do the odd episode. And certainly, if and when I ever put a book together, I will, you know, make sure that I put it out, perhaps as a very short podcast, just, you know, advertising my book, because it's all about me, obviously. You know? So that's pretty much it, really. Just the final thing to say, I guess, is thanks very much for listening. I really appreciate, firstly, all the coffees that have been bought for me. You know, I mean, I'm never going to sleep again. There's so much caffeine bouncing around my system. But feel free to buy me some more. That's fine. I don't have to buy a coffee. You know, I might buy a beer with it, for example. But yeah, thanks very much for listening. I hope you found it interesting. And please, again, depending on the environment you work in, if you're a new cop or someone who wants to join the police, perhaps you would just, you know, tell your colleagues or your new colleagues about this, because they might find it interesting or helpful possibly going forward. I'd like to get it out there. You know, it'd be a shame to waste it, as you know, 86 times half an hour is a fair bit of time and work, you know, to get it out there. Hope you've enjoyed it. Thanks very much for listening. Take it easy. Maybe we'll speak soon. Cheers for now. Bye.